You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're just men trying to do the right thing. Usually, when I do a monologue here, I write out this big long thing and I read it back to you and try to pretend like it's off the cuff. But this week I really wanted to go off the cuff a little bit because it was sort of a big week. And I don't know if it was a big week culturally or a big week just for me, but it was important to me, definitely. And I just want to sort of speak from quote unquote the heart a little more. Last week when the reviews started coming out for Batman vs. Superman and we started to see the Rotten Tomato meter keep dropping down below 50%, and I think it's sitting around 29 in the 20s right now, I was really disheartened because I thought I was going to be able to see the movie without having to deal with the negativity. In the same sense that I originally saw Man of Steel, I didn't have to deal with the negativity. Then after I saw it, I had to sort of grapple with that and then see the movie again and see the movie again to decide I liked it. But this time, the attacks came out immediately. And it was very disheartening to see because I thought this would be the time that Zack Snyder would finally get ahead. And I think maybe now he has. Because I saw something very interesting happen. And it's when the movie was actually released wide, starting Thursday afternoon and going over the weekend, where obviously it made a lot of money over the weekend, the audience had a very drastically different reaction than the critics did. And it was very shocking to me almost to see that. I mean, the second time I saw it, when I saw it on Saturday, there was even someone remarking as he walked out of the theater, that movie was really good. Why did the critics react the way they did? I, of course, leaned over to him and said, psst, they're anti-Snyder, which I'm sure he had no idea what the fuck I was talking about. But still, most of the theater clapped the second time I saw it, and I've had several people message me telling me how much they love the movie, so it's really interesting to me, and I don't know, again, if it's a cultural thing or if it's just my experience. I think I may have outgrown critics now, outgrown Rotten Tomatoes. I don't care anymore. I think they've proven themselves to be base. I wrote the article recently about subjectivity and film criticism, and then we've seen the end of subjectivity and film criticism, where the logical end of it, where it ends up with the whole reaction to Batman versus Superman. And for me personally, I think that I'm done with it. And I don't know if maybe a large segment of our culture might be as well, or they were already there, because the reactions, the reception to this movie by the audience was so drastically different from the critics. And I think that says a lot about where we are as a culture. And I don't know, maybe that has to do with Donald Trump, because if you shoehorn in Donald Trump to things, people listen to you more. So I just wanted to say, Donald Trump. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Daniel, any thoughts? I mean, we can go into it a little more later, but any brief thoughts on the whole critic-audience divide initially?
Critics are dumb. They're paid, you know, some amount of money to basically give you their opinion about a movie. And I don't frankly care about their opinion about a movie. If there were actual critics giving legitimate art criticism, like, I don't know, Justin at the midside, then I might go there for my movie reviews.
Yeah, how come I'm not paid?
I can't think of a single movie critic who doesn't simply throw out, this is what I personally in my emotional gut don't like about this movie, or even worse, in like the Metro Express newspaper that I read every morning to see what the left thinks, the movie critic who judges movies solely based on their social worth. And of course, completely panned Man of Steel because it was the typical male over masculinity driven nonsense. And then of course she praised the Wonder Woman bit, but said that ultimately Wonder Woman was just a figurehead for the macho XY nonsense. So I don't care.
We'll talk about that in a second too, because women are extremely important in the Snyderverse, as we've seen across all his films.
Right. She didn't actually care to evaluate Wonder Woman's role in the movie or the mother's role in the movie, Lois's role in the movie. She only said, oh, Wonder Woman on screen less than Superman, therefore bad. So all movie critics are basically worthless. That's what I'm saying. If you are a movie critic, go ahead and kill yourself. Thank you.
Also joining us via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. Elliot, what was the reaction in the theater both times you saw it? Because you just told us right before we started recording, you got back from your second time seeing it. I was kind of mad you were a little bit late here, but when you were like, I just got back from seeing Batman versus Superman again, I was like, all is forgiven, my son.
Listen, both times, I think the audience erupted in cheers at the end. And it's telling because today, the theater was not as full, but it was just as loud in terms of the applause. And
well, it's
I
a Monday. It's not the weekend. Some people have jobs.
Yeah, what? True. Well, when you work in the travel industry, sometimes you get these little perks. But anyway, so I still struggle to find words with that. I know you and I just discussed in messages like our view of the theme and our view of the critics and the people. I mean, because honestly, really, truly, Justin and I had different reactions on different experiences in terms of how our friends saw it on Facebook. Justin had a lot of people that really, really liked it. And on my friends list, I had a lot of people that really didn't like it. Although, I mean, and among them are people who I genuinely are genuinely rational people, but I find that there's a lot of, you really have to go into it knowing that it's a Snyder movie. I think that that's very important. If you don't understand Zack Snyder's aesthetic, his sense of life, you're not really going to, you're going to be, you can't help but be not disappointed, but yeah, I guess you would be disappointed if you don't, if you go into it expecting something that this movie was not, is not going to be.
Right. And to be fair, my friends who liked it were smart enough to say, hey, Justin, what do I need to know about this movie before I see it? So it may have been that I prepped them properly.
Yes, that too. Yeah. The other thing is I think it really shows, like you were saying, about the difference between the critics and the fans. And this is the first time I really think in a long time that the fans have really stood up and the people have stood up and they said, no, this is a great movie. You are wrong. Telling the critics you are wrong. I think that's a fantastic thing. And I hope that it keeps going.
Definitely, definitely. Hopefully it'll continue to keep going. And maybe we'll see a little bit of it here when we talk about these stories in the news with Daniel T. Richards. There's consequences to what we say and what we do. While you're dancing like an idiot, they're looking up to you.
Batman and Superman weren't the only verses to make the news this week. Capitalism versus communism also made the news when the president, speaking to an audience of Argentinian youth in a town hall in Buenos Aires, said that basically there was no difference between capitalism and communism, or at least very little difference. Dismissing the debates about the differences between the two ideologies as merely interesting intellectual arguments, he told the town hall participants not to worry about all that and just to do whatever is practical. Obama said, quote, so often in the past there has been a division between left and right, between capitalists and communists or socialists, and especially in the Americas, that's been a big debate. Those are interesting intellectual arguments, but I think for your generation, you should be practical and just choose from what works. You don't have to worry about whether it fits into the socialist theory or capitalist theory. You should just decide what works.
I don't do this often to start with. Like, usually I build to this, but Jesus fucking Christ, is that a speech out of Atlas Shrugged? Like, at the, one of the parties? At, like, the Reardon anniversary party or whatever? Or the wedding?
By Balf Eubanks?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it sounds exactly like it, doesn't it?
It is very much like that. And it's unbelievable that this guy who's supposedly incredibly intelligent and taught constitutional law thinks that there is little difference between these two systems. there couldn't be any bigger difference between any two systems of government. Like, you are literally talking about the polar opposite ends here. You are not talking about, you know, minarchism versus anarchism, or even communism and socialism. You're talking about the ends of the spectrum that are incredibly radically different.
Well, I have a question for you. On here I have capitalism versus socialism. Was he actually comparing capitalism and communism?
He says all three of them in the thing.
Oh, so he really has no fucking clue. He's like talking about the whole spectrum as if it's the same thing.
It's only been 8 years, Justin.
This is what it means to be on the spectrum, by the way.
Indeed. He's a speck. I'm going to continue a little bit of quotes from him. Quote, depending on the problem you are trying to solve, depending on the social issues you are trying to address, what works? What you'll find is the most successful societies and economies are the ones that are rooted in a market-based system, but also realize a market does not work by itself. It has to have a social and moral and ethical and community basis. Did you get that?
Excuse me.
I think this is like the definition of big government. He just said, I'm going to take what the right does for big government. I'm going to take what the left does for big government. I'm just going to support all of it.
It's like a market doesn't work. I mean, but how would you know? How would he know? We haven't actually had a truly free market in this country.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of something to laugh at his stupidity, and that is a rightful thing to do. I also want to bring in a minor bit of serious note here that there is no victims of capitalism society or victims of capitalism memorial, but there is with communism.
What do you mean? That's ground zero.
Because to date, according to the official statistics, communism has killed more than 100 million people. 100 million human beings are dead.
That's just bad people, Daniel. That's not communism's fault. That's the leader's fault who perverted communism.
In the name of communism.
Eggs, omelet, you know, Daniel. Come on.
They were communists in name only.
Kinos?
Kinos!
Yes, Kino Ren.
Kino Ren.
I gotta take a trip to the gynecologist.
Yes, just spread them. Spread them wide.
Spread them and show me what you got. I'm about to violate you.
But you can see the direct corollary here, because Obama goes on to talk about President Castro and Cuba, which is clearly communist, and says that they've made great progress in educating young people. Quote, every child in Cuba gets a basic education, medical care. The life expectancy of Cubans is equivalent to the United States, despite its being a very poor country, because they all have access to health care. That's a huge achievement. They should be congratulated.
Incorrect. I have to interrupt here.
Okay.
The reason Cubans have the same life expectancy of Americans is because they all become Americans. It's
also,
because they have access to Miami. That is why.
Very true. And Miami sends them various foods and medicines and goods. If there wasn't this constant flow of illegal contraband from Miami to Cuba, many Cubans would be dying of diseases that were wiped out a long time ago. This is nothing to be congratulated over. Additionally, this whole thing about every child gets an education. If the child speaks out against the leader, they can be jailed for the rest of their life. Congratulations. What sort of education have you gotten? Is there any greater indictment of communism, socialism, other than the people in those countries that adopt these ideas try their darndest to flee those countries? They have to build walls not to keep the Mexicans out who want to get in, but to keep the people in who want to leave.
Yeah, take that, Donald Trump. What makes us great is what you want to stop, so we don't need to make America great again.
Exactly. If communism was so great, the Mexicans would be paddling over to Cuba.
Yeah.
But, alas.
Well, maybe Donald Trump should run on that platform. Make Cuba great again!
He can run on that platform as long as his supporters don't write it in chalk. Yes, this is a story that's been going around, but one that we could not hold off of. Because it's so beautiful. College students at Emory University headed to class Monday morning and were greeted with a sight that has caused horrible trauma. Yes, they saw sidewalk chalk messages around the Atlanta campus supporting Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump. Yes, 40 students gathered later that day at the school's administration building to protest the messages and demand help from the university officials, feeling afraid and in pain due to the political message. This is one of my favorite quotes here. So one student said, "I'm supposed to feel comfortable and safe here at a college." Comfortable and safe. "But this man is being supported by students on our campus, and our administration shows that they, by their silence, support it as well. I don't deserve to feel afraid at my school." So the question remains, what was actually scary about the sidewalk chalk drawing? Was it the shade of pink used? Was it the brand of chalk? What was it that's frightening about sidewalk chalk? Justin?
I'm going to belabor this point. I'm not going to say anything witty about any of the things you just said. I'm going to belabor this point. We talked about this last week. I believe this was even my opening monologue last week. Donald Trump isn't that fucking bad. Now, I'm going to clarify that. I do not want him to be president, nor do I want any of the candidates to be president. But he's not goddamn Hitler. Somebody supporting Donald Trump is not a reason to be afraid for your life. He's been built up as this boogeyman. As if, like, somehow his existence is an affront to human nature. Like, he's a horror movie villain. Like, you just got trumped. Like, I just don't, like, that's not a reason. Like, I'm sorry. Anyone who feels afraid and in pain over chalk supporting a candidate they don't like has never felt real pain and suffering. Never.
You're fired from a cannon into the sun. I think that's what they think is going to happen to them.
They think they're going to be sent to internment camps or something. It's just a complete lack of reality. You've never felt real pain.
Right, because the party that sends people to internment camps in America are Democrats.
I'm not even going there. I'm just saying.
Dude, they did!
We need to. This is what we need to do, okay?
That long ago!
This is what we need to do. Any campus that this happens on, we just need to release a bunch of midgets to go around kicking people in the shins so they know what real pain feels like.
Midget kick. It's more annoying, I guess. It's like stubbing your toe, like at night when you get up to go pee. You're stumbling around in the dark because you don't want to turn on the light, because the light at that time is like the worst possible thing you could imagine. Yeah. Okay, let's assume there are children being traumatized by seeing the word Trump in chalk on a sidewalk that can be washed off by you spitting on it and rubbing your foot against it with some amount of pressure. Those students need serious psychiatric help because they're not going to be able to deal with anything in reality. But two, what is really going on here? So the university is not denouncing this. And one student said, quote, "The university doesn't have to say they don't show I'm sorry. The university doesn't have to say they don't support Trump, but just to acknowledge that there are students on this campus who feel this way about what's happening, to acknowledge all of us here." What?
I mean, doesn't that create the atmosphere where every morning they have to do something to acknowledge all the different point of views on campus? Like, is that all it takes? Like, a Facebook post every morning? Like, "We acknowledge there are people who didn't like the speaker last night, and we also acknowledge there are people who did enjoy the speaker last night." And then, the same way we're getting to individualism by accident, aren't we again just getting to basic communication by accident? When the school sends out a bulletin and says, "Hey, Milo Yiannopoulos," or however you say his name, "is going to be speaking on campus." And then it's assumed, because everyone has basic respect for each other, that there were people who will like this and people who won't like this.
I want to do something here that I constantly, almost on a daily basis, yell at Justin for doing, which is psychologize.
Woohoo! I win!
I want to do it en masse.
I win!
Because this student is revealing something I think that is psychologically telling. They're not calling for the university to denounce Trump. They're calling for the university to acknowledge that they are hurt, that they are injured. What they want is legitimacy.
Yes.
They want someone to acknowledge that their psychological feelings have some importance in the world, which to me reveals that they implicitly or maybe even explicitly know that they don't.
Well, I'm going to take this a step further since you opened this door and we're going down the psychologizing pathway. I'm having fun right now. So I'm going to take what you said and I'm going to trump it.
Oh, look what you fucking did there.
This is what I think. I actually think this is a result of the narcissism in our culture, where we've all been raised to, and I say this because this is something I've personally struggled with, because my exact issues are the fact that nobody did fucking pay attention to my feelings and opinions growing up in my family. In the same way, you know, we've talked about with the whole Adam Carolla thing off the show, Daniel, where Adam Carolla says that, like, he's gotten used to just believing he doesn't matter in any situation. I deal with that. So I had to grapple with this issue. And this issue is, well, you want that legitimacy, but are you actually missing it or not? Like, are you getting that psychological visibility? But I think the problem with these people actually is they've been raised to be narcissists. And because the world isn't acknowledging that narcissism, that's what is causing them the pain. Because rather than challenge their premise of, well, maybe the world doesn't revolve around my fucking feelings. Because here's the difference. When I see something that offends me like that, like this is just something we were talking about pre-show, Daniel. When I see somebody on the Funko Pop message board saying Jessica Jones needs pops, I don't get offended and I don't need to go in there and say, no, this show doesn't deserve pops because it's fucking evil. But another dude needs to go in the Batman versus Superman Wave 2 thread where someone says, what's the second series of Batman versus Superman pops going to be? Because I really like the movie. And some dude needs to go in there and say, no, the movie wasn't good. It doesn't deserve pops. That's the narcissism that needs to be acknowledged. Because you think whenever something like that happens, the number one thing you think of is myself and my reaction to it. I mean, let me ask you guys. When you see chalk written on the sidewalk of something, is your immediate response how it affects your life? What's your immediate thought when you see chalk written on the sidewalk that says something?
Elliot?
I'm used to seeing, like, Mickey Mouse's signature scrawled in chalk on the sidewalk. So I literally have no bad feelings about writing on sidewalks at all.
Very funny. Well, being in D.C., I have the misfortune to see a lot of shit written in chalk in a lot of places. So usually, one, I score it on cleverness points. So if you're clever, you get more points in my book. But two, honestly, I just acknowledge it, think, oh, that's dumb or unfortunate or whatever, and then moving on.
But see, what you're exhibiting there is a healthy psychology. And what I mean by that is you're engaging with the content first, not your own feelings. Do you see how both of your responses there were, one, I gauge it on cleverness, and two, I think if it's dumb or not. That's gauging the content. That means you have a healthy enough psychology because you're already trusting your own mind. These people are more concerned about other people and their feelings. It's a narcissism that can only end in second-handedness.
Yeah, absolutely, agreed. And the other added element to this is the political added element to it, which is when you mix this narcissism with this social justice political side of things must be made equal, which ultimately means things must be destroyed, you have this because of my feelings, therefore this thing must be torn down. Not even the acknowledgement part, which is what he was getting at, but the added political element is because I don't agree with this thing, it has to be destroyed.
Well, and that's the thing I have the most trouble with. And, you know, we didn't talk about that in the opening, and I think maybe this is the good time to talk about it, is I really think that is a lot of the motivation behind the negative reviews of Batman versus Superman. It's the narcissism that comes from the subjectivity of film reviews. As you said, they're not actually doing art critiques, right? They're not actually art critics. They're just giving their opinion, or that one guy I wrote about said, all film criticism is just sharing your experience with the film. Well, that's definitionally narcissism. Here, read an article about that. And then it becomes what you said. They're just interested in destroying what they don't like. It's not celebrating what they do like. It's destroying what they don't like, and that's what I have the most trouble with because that's so foreign to me. Even with all the issues I have, I don't know, I just don't have that sort of malevolence in me. And what I started seeing last week where people were trying to start false rumors that Zack Snyder was going to be fired, and they were saying he was going to be taken off of the Justice League, even though it begins filming on like April 11th or something. And it was just that it was, before the film was wide released, there was it was a coordinated attack. It's become, we have to destroy what you said, Daniel. We have to destroy what we don't like. And that's something I just don't understand. And does it come from the narcissism?
It's very Lex Luthor.
Yeah, it's fed by the narcissism. But, and it's because, I think, to continue down this rabbit hole of psychologizing.
I win!
It's because people don't, I think it's because people don't have an efficacy with their own abilities. They don't think that they can make it in this world. And I think that is fueled by the political side, the left saying you are being held down, you're being oppressed, you can't get ahead in life because of various reasons. And people internalize that and they create it and they make it becomes their psychology. And so they think, well, yeah, I don't have efficacy. Therefore, if something threatens me, i.e. something emotional that makes me feel bad, it has to be destroyed because it is an existential threat to my being.
Well, and actually, Elliot, I don't know if you heard him, made a really good comparison that's really relevant. What did you just say, Elliot, the comparison? It's very much like
Lex Luthor, yeah.
Yeah, it's very much like Lex Luthor in the movie, so I think we can touch on that when we get to our review.
Speaking of touching, gays. Yes. Our first pinknews.co.uk article. Yes. The National Union of Students LGBT campaign has passed a motion calling for the abolition of representatives for gay men. Why? Because gay men, quote, don't face oppression in the LGBT community. The motion blames cis gay men for misogyny, transphobia, racism, and biphobia. It says, quote, those things are often present in LGBT plus societies. This is unfortunately more likely to occur when the society is dominated by white cis gay men. Gay men do not face oppression as gay men within the LGBT community and do not need a reserved place on the society committees. So how about it, Elliot? How's that oppressing going, you cis gay whatever word?
I mean, it's beyond the pale, this whole thing.
Yes.
That's literally the only reaction I have anymore to these kind of stories. It's just, that's all I can do. Because,
yeah.
We've talked before about the fact that oppression, when, you know, it's the race to the bottom that the social justice warriors love to do. You know, eventually you eat each other because once you get to the point where it's all about how much weaker you are, or how much more oppressed you are, you turn into the people in the factory in Starnesville in Atlas Shrugged. All of a sudden, it's not about what you're willing to do for each other out of benevolence, out of your own capacity and your own ability. All of a sudden, it's who's the weaker one? Who's the weaker one so that they can get more of the attention, more of the publicity, more of the support from the establishment on the left, the social justice establishment. That's really what's going on here. It's degrading. It's disgusting. And I think that cis gay men should just own it and say, you know what? We're not oppressed because we live in the United States of America. We don't live in fucking Iraq or Saudi Arabia where they hang us or throw us off buildings or set us on fire. We are not oppressed because we live in a free society. And that's something to be grateful for. There should be gratitude there. So I'll own it. No, I am not oppressed in this country, and neither are the rest of you motherfuckers.
And if anyone like is wondering who is following the Facebook page, that's where the meme came from that I made, cis gay male, where it was David Caruso, and it said, it looks like he was hung out to dry. I was making fun of this. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh,
thank
sorry.
You. No, don't apologize. I should have paused for that. That was my mistake. That is a legal obligation that anytime anyone does that meme, That's the proper response. So, so that's where I got that from, because this idea of cis, like, Elliot, how does it feel to be a cis now? You're a sissy with the rest of it. Like, how does that feel?
It feels no different. Honestly, like, I think it's just, it's a stupid concept, you know, because, you know, cisgender, transgender, I mean, I don't see the point for the cis label. I mean, if a person is transgender, fine, use that term, but why can't I just be gay? Like, why can't you just be straight? Why is that label even there?
Well, because rhetorically, and Daniel, back me up on this, I think it's to other the normal. And what I mean by that is, you create different labels for new categories so we can understand and communicate about the new categories. But if something is the norm, you theoretically shouldn't need a label for it. But what they're trying to say is, cis and trans are equal, therefore they both need their own labels, therefore we've created the label cis to go with trans. That's what I think they're saying.
I think James just messaged that Trump is becoming a woman.
Don't know what that means, but interesting to investigate.
So I'm just throwing it out there.
Although that would be a crazy next turn in this reality show election, which is Trump comes out and says, I'm going to become Caitlin Trump instead of Donald.
Honestly, if he did that, I would vote for him. I would. I would do it. Because he would only do that in a trolling way.
I'm lobbing off my huge penis.
My pecker.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be great. I've talked to the best doctors. They're the best.
You're the best woman in the world. The best woman ever.
I'll be better than Hillary. So this whole thing is unbelievable to me. It is sort of a carousel of oppression. And it's sort of like we get to take turns being oppressed. And it's like, oh, the gay man's getting too much attention. Let's kick him off the carousel of oppression so that there's more time for us.
When's
on the carousel.
Turn?
No carousel of oppression for you, white boy.
But I'm short.
Straight white boy.
I'm short.
Yeah, but that just means you're inferior. That doesn't mean you're impressed.
Oh, so everyone doesn't look down on me?
No, we literally do look down on you, yeah. So, it's as Elliot said, it's a race to the bottom. And there's just going to become a point where lesbians aren't oppressed and then bisexuals aren't oppressed, and then eventually trans won't be oppressed anymore, but gays will be a little bit oppressed. So we'll just play this carousel of oppression and until these people rock themselves to sleep at night, crying slowly.
But isn't it like Starnesville, like in Atlas Shrugged? The way factory.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what happened there.
Right. For the non-Atlas Shrugged readers in the audience, what Elliot's referring to is in Atlas Shrugged there was a factory in Starnesville. The name of the town was Starnesville. And at that factory, the owners decided they weren't going to give pay based on amount of work done or based on value added to the company. They were going to do it based upon need. And it worked at first, but then what everyone figured out was they could game the system by proving they were the most neediest. So everyone stopped focused, or the neediest, not most neediest. Wow, that's awful grammar. By proving they were the neediest. And then everyone stopped working and they worried about just having the biggest claim of need over everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. So race to the bottom, like Elliot was saying. And this is how it is with oppression. It's not how can we stand up and be better. It's how can we prove we're worse off.
Right. It's the basic idea that if you figure you're not going to win the Super Bowl, you might as well just lose all your games and get the first pick.
Yeah, talking to you, Colts.
Yeah, suck for luck. Well, and that's, guess what? Now you suck with luck.
Oh.
But, you know, we can talk all day about this and get depressed, but why should we in a week when great romantic art was released? We don't have a race to the bottom here. We have a joyride to the top. Let's talk about it in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. All right, gentlemen, I don't know how you want to start this off. Daniel, do you want to give a brief summary? Because I probably will give too much of a summary. I'll just summarize the whole movie. just about what happened in Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, which was released on Friday, technically. I saw it at a preview at 6:30 on Thursday, so I was one of the first non-pre-shows to see it. When did you guys see it?
You want me to give a summary of a movie called Batman versus Superman? Just being clear.
Okay. The whole movie wasn't Batman. Like, I think that's part of what people are disappointed in, who are disappointed.
I know. It's called a joke. So, here we go.
Hurt me.
I'm just going to read the IMDb summary, which is perfectly fine, which is, fearing the actions of Superman are left unchecked, Batman takes on the Man of Steel while the world wrestles with what kind of hero it really needs. With Batman and Superman fighting each other, a new threat, Doomsday, is created by Lex Luthor. It's up to Superman and Batman to set aside their differences, along with Wonder Woman, to stop Lex Luthor and Doomsday from destroying Metropolis.
Even that's not an adequate summary. That's like a surface-level reading of the movie.
It has all the elements that happened, and I think that's the important part. Yeah. Now, let's dissect.
If that sounds reasonably interesting to you, go see the movie, because it's actually much more complex than that.
It's a lot more complex than that.
Complex than that.
Which may be why I didn't react as positively as Justin.
I was
and
doing
Elliot,
a pun
but,
on the word Lex.
Hilarious. But let's get into the specific reviews. Justin, no. I think we should do it this way. I think we should do it Elliot, Justin, me, because I think that goes from most excited to second most excited to least excited, I think.
Yeah, but won't my... the thing I say about it give clarity to what you guys are saying about it?
Oh, really, Mr. Smarty Pants? No, let's just give our reactions and our short reviews. Let's keep it to like a minute or
something.
Okay,
and I want to preface something to the audience before we do this right now. This is not our Snyder series. As Elliot actually said to us pre-show, they are going to be releasing a extended cut rated R, 30 more minutes. We did previously talk about this on the show, but I personally don't believe that it's worth analyzing the film completely until we see the extended cut, because I actually think the extended cut will fix some of the issues Daniel is going to bring up.
And I am completely open to that. I completely acknowledge that. So I don't think it's fatally flawed. I don't even think it's a bad film, but let's go. Elliot, what do you think?
And give, so this is what we'll do. We'll talk for a minute and then we'll give a 1 through 10 rating.
Okay. So for me, I just adored this movie. And I think the main reason for it is because I love that it's so directly and starkly points out the importance of having a man of ability in the world and having, the idea of a hero, you know, and how that translates to everybody, every culture in the world. I mean, there's a montage moment, I think, in the film where it's just Superman helping people in different situations. Different people are giving commentary. There's some cameos. But there's one person who comments who's very prescient, and he makes the comment that human beings, we've always looked to heroes. We've always had an idea of the heroic. And what we do is we project our visions or our ideas of heroes onto people in reality. And that's what, in the film, he surmises that that's what they're doing to Superman. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I think a lot of people, and it's a good, and there's a good side and a dark and a not so good side. Because if your idea of people with ability is that they're going to lose control, that they're not going to do good, or they're not going to, that they're out to destroy things and out to be nihilistic and destructive, then your concept of people of ability and of a person of ability is going to be a negative one, a dark one. And you'll react in a really horrible way to someone like that. But if you're somebody who believes that people with ability, I mean, are capable of amazing things, that they're a good thing to have in this world. It's good to have people with ability, and it should inspire us to develop our own abilities in our own way. Then your view of heroes will be a much more benevolent one, a much more positive, brighter one. And this film puts it in stark contrast. I mean, and it's dealing with the two things. And I think that's why I misidentified the theme the first time I saw it, which Justin kind of corrected me on. And when I saw it again, then I'm like, okay, now
that, yeah, win.
Yes, you win. You always win.
That's my new catchphrase.
Yeah, it's a new catchphrase.
So the one I think you stole from Mr. Bean?
Shut up.
Okay.
Just for me, I think that that's, I mean, I would rate this, I would say, if maybe not a 10 because we haven't seen the full version yet, but I would definitely put this at like a 9.
All right. Fair enough. Justin?
All right. Well, that was very abstract, so I'm going to try and be a little bit more concrete so the audience can understand a little bit better to grasp onto it. Because I think if you haven't seen it and you hear a purely abstract summation of it, it's just kind of like, what? So basically, this movie is about, and I'm going to start with an abstract statement and then build towards concrete. What I actually just tweeted earlier today was, I would say this movie is about humanizing rather than othering men of ability. And what I mean by that is, we started to see this in Man of Steel, but we definitely see it in this movie where people see Superman as this other because he has this tremendous ability. We all know what Superman's abilities are. And this is mainly concretized in two characters. And they're the other two men in this movie who have great ability. It's Lex Luthor and Batman, Bruce Wayne. And both see Superman as a threat. But they see him as a threat for different reasons. Even though it's the power they're threatened by, Lex sees him as a threat because Lex wants to be the most powerful person on the planet, whereas Batman is afraid of him and afraid of for his life. And basically over the movie, you see Batman and Superman grappling with, you know, what am I supposed to do with my power? Batman does it in a more negative way because he's trying to, you know, basically build up to kill Superman. And Superman's deciding, should he shrug or not? I mean, a joke I made on the Man of Steel podcast was, is Man of Steel Zack Snyder's Atlas Shrugged? Well, that definitely continues here where Superman is literally deciding if he should shrug or not. And the moment when he decides not to is very powerful because it flies in the face of all self-sacrificial heroes. And it flies in the face of the Jesus myth.
By the way, Shruggernaut is the worst villain in all of Marvel. Should I kill them? Meh. Maybe next time.
Shruggernaut versus the Shruggalos? Yeah. Have you ever heard that? People who say fans of Atlas Shrugged are Shruggalos?
That's kind of funny. I like that a little bit, but I just couldn't resist when you said shrug or not, and I was that's
shrug or not
awesome.
Sounds like an astronaut who goes to space and is like, fuck it, I'll just go back. Should I go to space? I don't know.
Yes.
No, you're right. You know, he's deciding whether he wants to do that. And then Batman's deciding whether, you know, he's trying to kill Superman or not. And they both resolve their plots by getting in touch with their humanity. Now, I know specifically Daniel hates the moment where they reconcile.
Yes.
He hates the way that was executed. But it's what happens is when Bruce Wayne, Batman, stops seeing Superman as an other and realizes he's just a human, that's when they can finally get together and find justice. And that's when they can finally start fighting Lex Luthor, who creates Doomsday. And there was one quote in the movie that was said in the same montage that Elliot brought up about the newscaster or the thinker saying, you know, men have always looked towards heroes. There's one quote.
I too. What? It was the same guy.
Oh, Woodburn? Did Woodburn say the quote you were saying?
Yeah, I think it's all part of the same quote.
It might be. But the quote that I specifically zeroed in on, I don't know, the voices were all confusing and everything. I was just like, what? That's the right quote. Okay, whatever. Moving on. So the quote that specifically stood out to me was, maybe he's not some sort of a devil or Jesus. Maybe he's just a guy trying to do the right thing. Now, this quote was said explicitly about Superman. But seeing as how the movie's called Batman versus Superman, and throughout the movie, Batman represents the devil and Superman represents Jesus, because that's how people conventionally understand them and how they're conventionally understood in the movie. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, villains coming from below and heroes coming from above. And ultimately, none of that matters. This quote can be understood that neither of them and I would say none of them, including Wonder Woman and the other metahumans in the metahuman thesis that Lex Luthor refers to, which is the idea that there are other superpowered people in the world, none of them are devils or Jesus. They're all just guys trying to do the right thing. And that is, to me, a very humanist approach to superheroes. I would argue it's even a very objectivist approach to superheroes, ironically, because you would think that you would want them to be idealized. They are idealized in their abilities, but the point is they still have to use their minds to figure out what the right thing to do is. And there was another theme throughout the movie where people kept repeating the phrase, "My world, my world, my world." And when Superman finally decides to fight, that's what he says to Lois. He looks at Lois and he says, "This is my world. You're my world." And that's what makes him fight. He doesn't fight because he's obligated to, because he has to sacrifice to the world. He fights because he has values that are worth protecting, and he's going to do everything he can to protect him. And I can't think of a more humanist and a more objectivist way to approach a superhero. So ultimately, I would give this movie, and I'm undecided here, so I'm gonna give it a wonky rating. I would give it a 7.75, because I can't decide if it's an 8 or a 7.5.
Weirdo. Metahuman Thesis is the greatest prog rock band of all time. And a relative of Meta World Peace.
But fuck him, he works for the Lakers.
So, you got the good from these two, and I don't disagree really with anything that is said except for maybe some emotional reactions to given things. I don't disagree with what they said about themes. I sort of took a very primitive stab at the theme last night, which was something to the effect of, it's a false dichotomy between being a savior and a villain. That's not exactly the way I would formulate an official theme for a piece of art.
But right, that's definitely a sub-theme of what I was just saying, is because it's very simple. I mean, that's the ironic thing, right? They say Snyder's very simplistic because he says that we're all just humans. But ironically, they're the ones who are being simplistic because he's the one who's breaking down the traditional villain-hero dichotomy, and he's just saying it's men making choices. So I think that's definitely related or part of what I was saying, and that's why they decided to make Batman the villain. And have his scenes were more horrific in his plot. They were more of a horror movie, especially in the beginning. And they made Superman more of a romantic drama.
Those dream sequences, man, they were something else. I jumped out of my seat for that one.
That fucking bat, dude, with the bat, the giant bat. I was like, holy shit. And the first time you see Batman, after he's branded the criminal at the very beginning where they try and find him, they were definitely trying to make him look like a horror movie monster.
Yeah. All that is well and good. So here are what I think are some of the problems of the film, which is why I think it's a good film if flawed. And my reasoning that I think it could be a great film is I really want to see the full extended cut, the non-theatrical release. So, Justin thought that my main problem with this film was going to be pacing. And I think the more I thought about it, it's related to pacing, but it's more about the way it was cut. So I guess that's probably an editing problem or maybe a writing problem, although I'm assuming it was just cut around and that's why the writing feels clunky. Here's my problem with it. The film is dealing with many complex, difficult philosophical issues, and the way that it goes about it doesn't feel like any of them are 100% complete to me. It feels like a little bit of all of them was left on the cutting room floor, but as a result, the resolution of the film, which is the Batman-Superman fight, and then ultimately Batman choosing not to kill Superman, because Superman says, "Save Martha." And everyone goes, "Well, who's Martha?" Well, that's his mother. And then Batman has a realization that his mother's name is also Martha, was also Martha, and she was murdered by the criminals.
Your characterization of this moment. Batman is suffering from PTSD his entire life from his parents dying. So when he hears that, "Save Martha," he flashes back to being unable to save his mother. It's not he flashes back. It's not, he's not, he goes, "Oh, you know, my mom had the same name too."
We flash back in an incredibly trite flashback sequence that feels very forced, which is unlike Snyder, which is why I didn't like. And then there's this whole thing. It's like, oh, your mom's named Martha. My mom's named Martha. You must be just like me. Therefore, I'm not going to kill you. Even though everything about you still applies. You still have the ability to destroy humankind. You still are unchecked superpower, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not saying that that is not overcomable in a better cut of the film. I'm saying the way
I'll
the film
you
is
who
cut
is
right now.
Overcomable. It was me with your mom.
Good retort. Good retort. Well played, sir. But the way the film is cut now, that moment doesn't pay off. It just doesn't. And it feels clunky to me, and it feels, well, it feels forced, like I said, which is very unusual for me, because I don't feel that way about other Snyder films at all in any given moments. One thing that to mention on the tremendous side, which went under mentioned for both of you, is this film score. Is
yes.
just true. Unbelievably good.
Yeah, it's Hans Zimmer. Speaking of overcomable, how about every time Wonder Woman's theme played? Oh my god.
Oh,
her
yes.
theme is fantastic. Fantastic. Oh, the music is by Hans Zimmer and Junkie XL.
It was all Junkie XL. He did all the good stuff.
Yes, I'm sure. But the film, like when I was watching it, if you close your eyes, you actually thought, am I watching a Hitchcock film? Because that's what the music felt like to me. And this plays up what Justin was saying a little bit about the horror scenes, but it just had a very classic feeling to it, especially, so Wonder Woman's theme ironically doesn't have that, but it's still tremendously good, but like Lex Luthor's theme, and especially when he is walking into the site of the crash ship for the first time.
Yeah, they did that very well when he makes his requests and then they cut, it was nonlinear. He makes his request to a senator. And then they cut to the future of him getting his request, and every time they cut to the future of him receiving the request, they play his theme.
Yes, and the theme is like almost like a classically written Russian ballet is what it feels like. And it's so gorgeous and slightly evil and ominous, and it just contains all these emotions. And the music is just stunning throughout, just stunning. People who say that the directing is overplayed and the music was overdone and you got too exhilarated, I don't know what kind of world you want to live in. Because that the world that Zack Snyder presents through the visualizations and through the music and through the colorization is a tremendous universe. One that is all enveloping and one where all of your senses are activated for watching this piece of art. And that is the exact kind of art I want to experience. So the people that were complaining about that, just take a shovel and just bash your head in. Because that's about as good as life is going to get for you. So there's my defense of the film, even though I didn't particularly like it. As much as other Zack Snyder films. This is still probably better than between 89 and 96% of movies that come out nowadays. So
that
if you have any interest...
Before.
So if you have any interest in seeing good filmmaking...
That's the best reaction to Civil War ever.
Even if it is flawed filmmaking, in my opinion, you should see this film. I'd probably rate this like... So it's hard. Is this a scale of objective filmmaking or a scale of Snyder films?
Well, no, this is objective filmmaking overall. That's why I was really tough for me not to give it an 8. I'm waiting for the extended cut to push it up that high.
Okay, so this, I think the
we're
film
not
gonna
rate it, we're not gonna give it the Snyder series rating until we do the actual episode, and then we'll say where it fits in the scale.
Okay, fair enough.
I still don't know where it fits.
So the film as it's cut, to me, I think is probably a 6.
Ooh.
A good 6. I think with the extended cuts that allow the really deep philosophical questions to breathe more, I think it probably has the potential to be an 8. That's my thinking.
You are harsh. You are harsh.
I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Justin, you can answer for me.
Yes, Daniel. I can answer it.
Well, it's because you and I have seen it twice, and Daniel's seen it the one time.
Yeah, but fucking one-timer.
The guy in the wheelchair, Keith.
What's his name?
I think it was his last name, yeah.
Oh, I just knew the actor, so I just kept calling him actor.
Did he play Moriarty in Sherlock?
No.
Oh.
He stayed in my mind. Like, he's one of the characters that I still think about because it made such an impression on me. I don't think they ever clearly state whether if he knew about the bomb in his chair.
Like, yeah, he was a suicide bomber. He had to know about the bomb in his chair.
Because I know, like, towards the end, Luther talks about sending the letters, you know, the notes and everything, about sending the checks back to Bruce Wayne and all that. So I wasn't clear necessarily if Luther had tricked him or if he knew that he was going to be bombing the courtroom.
Well, he knew. Luther had corrupted him. That was the whole point of Luther giving him the wheelchair and everything. He was saying, hey, I'm bringing you into this plan. I mean, that's the thing about the entire movie that I think a lot of people are missing is really the whole movie is Lex Luthor corrupting anyone who has any doubt about believing in the goodness of man, right? And the whole reason Lex is doing that is what you were alluding to before in the news section where Lex has an inferiority complex. He's upset that he didn't really build anything, that it's his dad's company and it's not really his. He says, you know, my dad put the Lex in LexCorp. And, you know, he's upset that Superman is now the most powerful man on the planet where he was used to being the most powerful man on the planet. So anyone who has any sort of doubt about Superman, he uses them against Superman and he uses it against themselves. I mean, you could argue the guy in the wheelchair, the actor, Scoot McNairy, the actor, that's foreshadowing what he was doing with Batman. So the movie starts with a prologue, which is it sets up the Batman, you know, parents dying again, which if you're a Walking Dead fan, apparently Bruce Wayne's parents are Negan and Maggie from The Walking Dead, which has a level of humor to it. And then the prologue continues with Bruce Wayne in 9/11. And what I mean by that is the Metropolis disaster shot as if it's 9/11 with Bruce Wayne running around. And I found that to be very powerful. It was very reminiscent of 9/11. And then the movie starts. And the movie starts with three different threads. The threads are Batman, Superman, and Lex Luthor. And it seems very disintegrated the first time you see it. But when you see it again and you realize everything from the beginning of the movie is actually manipulated by Lex Luthor until the Batman versus Superman fight and they come together and decide, oh, we're going to take power now. And
Martha!
Yes, until Martha, which we'll get to that in a second. Then you realize Lex has been manipulating all of this stuff from the beginning. So, yeah, that character's supposed to stick with you because, you know, this is a man who suffered tragedy. A beam fell on him during the Metropolis accident, and he lost his legs. And he blames everything that happened on Superman, on the one percenter. But it's really not Superman's fault. The person who's really making him feel bad and keeping him down is Lex Luthor because Lex Luthor's not letting him heal emotionally. Lex Luthor's not letting him psychologically get the help he needs. He's using him to fan that fire to use him as a suicide bomber eventually.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I don't think the movie makes it 100% clear that he knew. But I think you're supposed to think that he knew.
Now I want to see it a third time, because doesn't the fucker smile before the thing blows up?
No,
I don't know.
They cut to him. He's the last thing you see.
But I don't think he smiled, though. And that's why I asked, because the first time I thought, okay, yeah, he did it on purpose. But when I saw it again, I was looking for some kind of a tail.
All right, let's pause this and I'll go watch and then come back and give a result. No, I'm just kidding. But by the way, with the suicide bombing scene, I thought an extra really subtle thing they did to show Lex Luthor be a dick was he's supposed to be sitting there in Congress with everyone else. And he sends his assistant in, who, by the way, is named Mercy, and he says, save my seat. And then they cut to the shot of him not being there with Mercy there, and then Mercy blows up with everyone else. I thought that was a great subtle way to show that Lex Luthor has no mercy.
Literally. No mercy.
Literally,
no,
that's intentional.
Has no mercy.
That's intentional.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's brilliant.
And by the way, okay, let's talk about the Martha thing for a second. I thought that was brilliant because it plays on Batman's PTSD, and it's something that's always existed. They've both always had mothers named Martha, and no one's ever pointed that out before, used it as a plot point. Although I do agree, I fucking hate in any movie when they flash back to things that already happened in the movie to show you, hey, we set this twist up. I fucking hate that shit. And that started with the first Saw. Where no, they're like, oh, look at all the things that happened before to set this up.
It was The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense came before? Yeah, I guess it was. You're right. And they probably made fucking M. Night Shyamalan do that because they thought the audience was too dumb.
Well,
yeah.
Because look, the first time I saw the opening where we do the shoot, where we saw Bruce Wayne's parents get shot again, and then they make sure to show Negan saying to Maggie, they make sure as Maggie falls, you know, as Bruce's father falls, they make sure to show him saying, Martha, and the way they emphasize it and make it very haunting. And I thought that was very strange, and it took me aback. But then when you get to the payoff, you're like, oh, that's why it was emphasized. Likewise, in his nightmare, they cover up Thomas Wayne, and you only see Martha Wayne when he's looking at his parents' graves. You only see her name. We don't need to flash back to that again. We've already seen it.
Was his father the comedian from Watchmen?
Yes, the comedian from Watchmen is Negan, is his father.
Hmm.
Also from Watchmen, the voice of the Kryptonian computer is Madame Gorski, who was also in Watchmen.
Interesting. What was I going to say? I'm not saying that the scene with him saying, save Martha, Martha, why did you say Martha, is inherently bad. Like, there's nothing that is purely bad about it. I think the way it's cut in the film and the way it's presented is not paid off based on the rest of the film. Maybe with the extended version, something about that is fixed and it's made more compelling. It's just not now. And people in the theater, not that I want to compare myself to the fucking masses, but that was one part in the theater where people were just kind of like, eh. And like, this is a theater that actually applauded a couple times throughout. So I don't think they were unsympathetic, but it's a very bizarre scene the way it's done.
I don't like their Barry Allen. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say it. I didn't like, yeah, it just, no.
The what? I'm sorry.
Okay. The Flash. He doesn't like Ezra Miller as the Flash. He's too emotionally invested in Grant Gustin.
I think that's true, and I am admitting that straight up. I'm admitting it. I love Grant Gustin as the Flash, but I don't like the characterization. And when you see the video footage, while Wonder Woman is watching it, you see, he looks like a dirty hippie. Like,
well, they're making him hipster, Barry Allen, is what they're doing.
I don't like that. That's not him, you know.
But that's a different story is all it is. Is they're just, cause he has to have an arc to start from. He can't just be like, hey, I'm an awesome superhero. Barry Allen starts from, he doesn't like himself. And who hates themselves more than hipsters?
I guess so. I wasn't crazy about it.
I mean,
crazy about the whole metahuman subplot. Anyway, I understand why. Wonder Woman was there and why they needed it to introduce her. I just didn't think it felt, you know what? This is the biggest insult I can give to the film is that part of it. And a couple of the other subplots felt like Marvel to me, which is we just need to shove in these other things so that we can set up future things.
But see,
and it didn't feel as integrated as a Snyder film usually feels.
This is where I disagreed with Daniel on the phone when he talked about it after. I liked that. And I liked it because Wonder Woman needs a reason to fight. Because, you know, she said, at the end of the movie, she's like, I abandoned humanity 100 years ago. Well, why would she join this fight unless she realizes there are more people like her and they're all going to join eventually? So it's sort of like, this is my decision making. Do I want to protect this planet or not? And that's what finally pushes her over the edge to see the video that Lex Luthor had of Cyborg, of Aquaman, of the Flash.
She can't choose to fight just because she's seeing Superman and Batman get their asses whooped by a thing that looks invincible?
No, she had already said
that.
100 years she had given up on that.
Yeah, but there's a thing named Doomsday that's basically indestructible. Like, I would have been fine with her coming back just for that.
But he was on the abandoned docks. Why does she care if they're on the abandoned docks? They're on the island with no people.
There's so no people.
No one's dying this time. There are no casualties.
Only monetary damage. Yes. Loved how that was shoved in 100 times in the film, by the way.
Well, I can't blame them, though. I mean, people made such a big fuss about it.
By the way, every time the Justice League assembles, it's like $30 trillion in economic damage. Like, we can't have them assembling all that often.
Well, I mean, you say that, but that's actually where they're going with Civil War. We've seen them in the trailers, right? They list off all the times the Avengers have done shit, and they're just like, you just destroy everything.
Have you noticed how they've recut that trailer? Because it started, the original trailers were about Steve and Bucky, and that being the source of the conflict. And now they've reformulated the trailer. Because remember, I mentioned...
There are two trailers. I think you're referring to the first one and the second one.
Well, yeah, but I noticed, remember when I went to see Deadpool, I mentioned that they did not have a Civil War trailer before it. And I think it was because they knew Batman versus Superman was going to be, well, basically it was probably going to kick its ass thematically. And, well, now we know financially as well. But I think that's probably a big reason for it. They've recut the trailer to try to make it seem a little bit more on par with Dawn of Justice. But honestly, it just shows how weak it is. Because if they're not really, there's no fighting for anything greater in that trailer. They're fighting amongst themselves. And it's almost petty and flimsy. You know, so, and I'm not looking forward to the comparisons that will be coming up over the next couple of months until Civil War opens. Oh, this is so much better because the other one was, I'm not looking forward to that at all.
Well, the comparisons have already started, and that was part of what I was talking about last week when the initial reviews came out. I mean, a lot of the reviews, and this is something I even noticed, Elliot, with the people who responded on your Facebook page to the movie, it's all cut and paste. It's all the same stuff. Snyder's a visualist. He should be a cinematographer. He has no idea how to tell stories. He doesn't know how to do characters. This movie's no fun. There's no humor like Marvel. That's what all the reviews were. It was literally like cut and paste, like... almost like a political party put out the agenda and the media was repeating it. And the disturbing thing to me was that random people were doing this as well. People on your status, people you actually know were repeating that. And I don't know how you get to the point in your life where you just repeat shit like that.
Well, you go through the American education system and you become stupid, and then you go to the internet and find out what your opinion should be.
Really think people do that? They go to the internet to find out what their opinion should be?
They don't do it explicitly like, I'm going to visit the internet today to see what I should think about this, but they are heavily influenced by what others say. They have very little ability to judge for themselves. That being said, because these are people I think who are judging beforehand, I think most of these people judged it before they even saw the film.
I agree, like, and I think that's a problem with a lot of the critics as well.
Yeah, much like you see Atlas Shrugged reviews, and then you ask them like, oh, who was the industrialist character? His name was like Bill... something. Like, oh, so you didn't read the book. No, I don't have to read it. No, it's terrible. It's like, okay, you're an idiot. Because when you made this point, I just want to reemphasize this as a point of news. 75% of people on Rotten Tomatoes said that they liked this film, and the film, this opening weekend, made $420 million worldwide.
Yeah. 166 actual million. They thought it was 170, but 166 million over the weekend. In America,
in the country that counts.
Right.
Largest Easter opening of all time, largest weekend opening in March, largest weekend opening in the spring, seventh biggest opening weekend all time.
Fourth biggest international opening all time worldwide.
Yeah. So despite all of the critics, people did show up to see this film, which I think that's something to note. I mean, we sort of talked about it earlier, but... I mean, this is a large-scale revolt, basically saying fuck you to the critics. And good for them. Good for people.
Right. And the interesting thing will be, now that the stage has been set, and we've seen these Sue sort of undermining films, and what I mean by it is, we had Deadpool, which was still very much in the Marvel mold, but it used the Marvel mold to make fun of the Marvel mold. And now we have DC, which is saying, hey, here's an alternative way to do superhero movies. Right? To me, the first two acts of Batman versus Superman were more of a drama than they were a action movie. And then the third is a typical action movie where it's just like large explosions, doomsday kills everything. This is another alternative. So now we've had two alternatives to the typical Marvel, mold, the Marvel formula, and now we're gonna get a big Marvel movie. It's going to be interesting to see how people react to it. Have perceptions been changed? Do people want something different? Or are people just going to be able to say, no, I want both of these things. They're both good. They're just different.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to find an article, because it was linked on Drudge, by the way, that said that they were predicting that Batman and Superman wouldn't even make back their production budget.
Well, part of what they started saying the past week, because these people, I was reading all this shit these people were saying. So the budget was $250 million, but people were then claiming that also, if you include marketing, the entire budget was $400 million. Marketing okay. plus production. So the people were trying to say, oh, this film's a flop because if it doesn't make a billion, Warner Brothers will be disappointed. And they were also, this is something else they were claiming. Oh, well, this movie should make $1 billion. Should? Where do you get the should from? Because in your head, Batman versus Superman is big enough to make a should? Yeah, it could. But there's a difference between could and should. Should means because of this, this ought to happen. Why? Because it's Batman versus Superman, ought it be they make $1 billion? Would Warner Brothers like $1 billion? Well, hell yeah, who wouldn't like $1 billion? But should it? No, they just wanted to make enough money that they know it's going to be profitable and they can continue to profit off of the other movies. That's all they're looking for. And you know what? They got it. But just because Marvel makes $1 billion doesn't mean they should make $1 billion.
Even on the $400 million mark, they've already made $20 million.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So they've already got what they want. They're going to make a profit and they're going to make a healthy profit.
Yeah. They beat Age of Ultron, didn't they, for the Age of Ultron's opening weekend?
Right, but now the argument that you're going to see people start making is, oh, well, word of mouth is going to be so bad that it's going to have a drastic drop-off on week two. It's going to have a record drop-off in week two, and that's when we'll see what the film's real staying power and worth is. That's the argument you're going to see now.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's this package deal, right? The idea of the performance of a film at the box office is tied to the quality of the film. And when you explain to him, that's not always the case. There are a lot of really good films that don't get the audience that it should have. And there are a lot of really terrible films that get a huge amount of people watching them.
Right. And we'll touch on that a little bit more on Reddit and Reddit. But the thing I want to be clear about here is they're not even arguing about the quality of the film anymore. This is more of wishing destruction and wanting to destroy what they don't like. They're hoping it falls off. That's them hoping it falls off on week two because they want Snyder to be fired. The number of times I saw people say Snyder should be fired in favor of George Miller, the director of Mad Max, if that's not wishing romanticism away in favor of naturalism, I don't know what is. All right, so...
Let's move on to Reddit with Reddit.
Well, I was going to do a couple trailers first. Do you want to just do Reddit on Reddit?
We're so long.
Okay. You don't want to talk about Lego Batman, really?
Okay, that's the only one you can mention. Okay, let's move on to that.
Since we're talking about Batman, there have been a couple Lego Batman teasers. So let's just briefly say, I want to know, is this Batman overkill, or does this look like it's worthwhile and going to be different enough that people will see it? Or do we just love Batman so much? Because I will say this, as a segue to this. So I bought, they have two Under Armour shirts, a Batman and a Superman one, which are made to look like the uniforms, the costumes in the movie. So, you know, Under Armour is the stuff, you know, that really, it's sort of like spandex that sticks to you. And, you know, I wear these for working out, or I wore, like, well, the first time I saw it, I wore Superman, and the second time I saw it, I wore Batman. And I have noticed, when I go out in public more, or when I go out in public, more people notice the Batman shirt than notice the Superman shirt. Does our culture just love Batman that they will watch any Batman movie?
Batman, Will Arnett, and Lego. Who's not going to watch this? This could be the highest grossing movie of all time.
The highest grossing Batman movie?
I'm just kidding, but it looked really funny. The trailer that was before the Batman v Superman was laugh out loud, sort of uproariously funny. Very well written, and Will Arnett is just so fucking good at what he does.
Yeah, and I think it's really kind of ballsy to put a Lego Batman trailer before a Batman movie, isn't it?
I mean, it's a similar audience. I think it makes sense. You're playing up to a nerd audience to some degree, so I like it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I thought the teaser was funny, and I thought the second teaser was funny as well. The one they just released today, the day of our recording. Elliot, did you watch either of these?
I watched the one that I sent, the Lego trailer. And I saw the Huntsman one that you have on the outline, but I didn't see any of the other ones.
I just saw the one that was before the Batman vs Superman movie.
Yeah, and in the second one, he's looking at the portraits of his family, of his parents in the Wayne Manor, and then yeah. Alfred sneaks up on him, and he accidentally like karate kicks Alfred, and they turn it into a whole thing of making fun of, basically a meta joke about the Batman tragedy story, because it's been told like 80 times now.
Yes. Yeah, it's really cute. I'm excited. I've been waiting for Will Arnett to do something funny since the rest of development. Here we go.
Ka-ka! Ka-ka! Okay, so let's give Daniel his wish, and we will build on something Elliot was talking about when we move to Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA blows, Steam rocks, God rest for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit, mostly pics of felines, comma whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit, no we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. Good movies with low Rotten Tomatoes score. So, one of the things is, people have been saying, you know, because something has a low Rotten Tomatoes score, that means it's a bad movie. But Reddit has this whole thread that you can click on in our outline here that shows all of these good movies with low Rotten Tomatoes scores. And the one that stood out to me that, Daniel, you mentioned was the first Saw is under 50%.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. Like, I'm not into torture porn. I'm not into Saw 2 through the rest of them. But Saw 1 is a very good movie.
It's not, Saw 1 is not torture porn at all.
No. It's incredibly innovative. It's a psychological thriller. It's got an amazing twist. It's a very good movie. And it's just unbelievable. I don't understand how the critics could not have liked that movie.
And Hook only got 31%. Come on! I loved Hook. That's my childhood right there.
Yeah, that one I can see a little more, but certainly only 31% of critics liked it. That's still a bit crazy to me. Any others that stood out? Because I have one in particular that I thought was just a travesty of...
Go ahead.
Whatever. No? Justice. Okay, I'll go.
It's a travesty of justice.
Yes, here we go. The Boondock Saints.
Ah, see, that's 20%. Interesting.
20%.
Yeah.
20%.
And I used that with the guy who was arguing with me on the Funko Pop forum where he was like, this has such a bad score, it doesn't deserve more pops. And he's like, name other movies with bad scores that have pops. And I listed that. And he was like, oh.
And, do you know what the audience rating is on Boondock Saints?
It's gotta be
91%.
Yeah, I was gonna say 88.
91%.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Boondock Saints is like, you know, like the Godfather or anything. It's not that kind of movie. But it is good for the kind of movie it is, and I think it's incredibly well acted. That's one of the things that I think people forget about it. But, yeah. And so Rotten Tomatoes scored everything. And by the way, Rotten Tomatoes scores, just for the audience, it's not like 31% like it's failing on a math test. That means 31% of critics said that they liked it. So there you go. Other ones that they list on here, some of them I don't necessarily agree with, but Home Alone, 54%. Who doesn't like Home Alone? It's ridiculous.
Childhood, man, like that's just crazy.
Tommy Boy, 44%. Ace Ventura, 45%. Billy Madison, 46%. And here's the giant fuck you to the critics. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 44%. Just go fucking kill yourselves, you worthless piece of shit. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, those original Turtle movies were very successful, and they were also very well done for the time, for what they were.
Yes.
I'm scrolling down this thread. Mighty Ducks got 12%. Mighty Ducks, 12%. 12%!
Yeah. Some crazy scores here. And someone pointed out, let me check this. I'm on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Do you know that movie, The Room? What was that called?
Panic Room?
No.
What, you mean that really bad movie that everyone watches to make fun of?
Yeah, what was that movie called?
It's called The Room.
It's called The Room?
Yeah.
Yes. The Riff Tracks guys do it all the time.
Yeah.
The Room, Rotten Tomatoes. I can't find it through there.
The Great Gatsby movie only has a 49%. That was a lot better than that.
The Room on Rotten Tomatoes, you ready for this? 35%.
So you're going to tell me they think that according to Rotten Tomatoes, The Room is a better movie than Batman vs. Superman?
Yes, and The Room is widely considered one of the worst movies ever made.
And they gave 54% for Man of Steel.
Yeah, most of Snyder's movies are hanging around like 60%.
Yeah. So, there you go. The Room. Widely considered the worst movie ever made, 35%.
Yeah, and what's that quote? Who's it by? Where he says you can tell when a true genius has emerged because there will be a confederacy of dunces against him. Who is that?
Oh. Is that Swift?
I don't know. Swift, Twain, one of them. But the point is, if that's not what Rotten Tomatoes is, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it's Jonathan Swift. Thank you.
Okay, well done. Yeah. You win this one.
Thank you.
All right. Next, Reddit. What's the worst case of oversharing you've experienced on social media? And you don't have to take this as like you've personally overshared. But if you read some of these stories, like usually I don't tell people to read the Reddit threads, but holy shit, some of these stories are fucking hilarious. Of things that were overshared on Reddit.
Yeah, I like this one. One girl I used to go to high school with posted a status like, worst Christmas ever, and her partner replied saying it wasn't that bad, I'm sorry. She then posts saying, you slept with a prostitute under the Christmas tree on Christmas Eve while your kids were asleep and I was asleep in the next room. Yikes. Someone's getting coal in their stocking next year.
So have you guys had any experience with this, seeing people overshare on social media, or do you have any pet peeves with people oversharing on social media? Because this is part of something I track, where I think our culture hasn't learned how to deal with social media yet.
Well, I mean, I don't know if this qualifies as oversharing, but I do have a friend from high school. We did theater together, musical theater, and she's now this uber feminist. And she has an obsession with menstruation. So she writes poetry, does presentations, and goes to like art galleries where they're featuring artwork involving vaginas and vulvas and the period, you know. And sometimes she posts some of this artwork and some of these articles that are really not what I need to see, you know, at like 7 a.m. when I'm having my bowl of cereal. You know what I mean?
Or ever, yes.
Or ever.
I mean, this is a loose definition of productive, but I'm ching. But at least she's being somewhat productive.
At least she's being somewhat reproductive.
Oh, that was good too.
Thank you. I don't have horror stories like that. I think mine are more general feelings. I know there have been a couple people on my friends list who share things like really intimate fights they had with a significant other. Or one older guy talked about him and his wife discussing whether or not they should get a divorce on social media.
Yeah.
And I just, it's not the place. I understand if you want to get advice from your friends, but talk to your close friends. These are things that employers could see, that your children are going to see. Just talk to your friends. Like,
I have a friend on Facebook who, she said her husband left her and their daughter because he was studying to be a tattoo artist, and she had promised that her first tattoo was going to come from him, but she went and got it anyway because she was tired of waiting. So he packed up and left her and her daughter. Their daughter.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, that is kind of dick. Like, the dude's learning and you can't even fucking wait. You have to go get a tattoo. Like, you can't make that commitment to your spouse. Like, fuck you. I don't know, I kind of take the dude's side on that. Like, I don't think he should have left, but come on.
Nah, I mean...
You need a tattoo that fucking badly?
I mean, I don't know, man, but... I mean, because he was studying for it, and I guess it was taking longer than they expected. She wanted her tattoo, so she went and got it.
Okay, speaking of oversharing, there's someone in my feed right now. This isn't as bad as some of the earlier's, but... quote, the near impossible task of finding a sports bra that is not padded nowadays is maddening. and makes me want to Hulk out or punch the prissy girls of the gym who wear them. Some of us are there to sweat. It's not a fashion show. I just want a new, good old-fashioned sports bra that does not come equipped with removable cups. Please, Jesus, please.
Sounds like an ugly chick.
Just, not necessary. I don't think. Not necessary. Also, one person on Facebook page said they were voting for Trump, and that's just disgusting.
Gross.
This is why I've maximized my feed, so it's like all bans. Like, I don't get people's obnoxious stuff right now. I'm
like we should ban carrots?
No, bands. Like bands telling me they're...
Oh, like rubber bands?
Yes, exactly. No, mm-hmm. I'm trying to find something right now. I'm scrolling through. I'm trying to find. I can't find anything.
Oh, ew. Someone shared a picture of Obama. Ew. Ew. Scroll away. Scroll away.
Yeah, I see a bunny rabbit with chainsaws.
Or how about this? Somebody commented on a thread of somebody else saying they're at LaGuardia and saying how long they've been on the tarmac and that what they're in line at. Like, why do you need to put that, like, why does that need to go on social media? Like, anyone gives a shit?
Twitter? Oh, man, and then they're complaining about it. I'm so glad. One of the things I'm glad not to have to see anymore are tweets from people, especially celebrities, when they're tweeting about how they're stuck on a plane at, like, JFK or LAX. Like, you do this all the time, people. You travel for your work. Come on, stop complaining.
It's like, what did people do before social media? Did they not complain about that shit?
They got really drunk to their on the flight.
Significant others and thus 51% divorce rate. I do like seeing the taxationist theft memes. I think
yes!
I get those from Elliot, that's it.
Yes, I love them. I don't even know who's doing them. I just love them.
All right. Last Reddit. This is again in our mildly interesting category. This Woo! Elevator has foot buttons. And if you click through, it's a picture of an elevator that you can push the buttons with your feet.
Awesome. That's not mildly interesting. That's
hearing ghost trees and stuff. You can just be like, beep.
Yeah. Cool.
Did you see what someone commented on it though?
No.
What about people in wheelchairs?
People in wheelchairs can't roll up to it?
Like I don't know. That's what they said. They were trying to make it into a, like, it's not ADA or some bullshit. That's the American with Disabilities Act.
Yes, indeed.
Scoot McNary's going to have to blow up the Capitol because he can't fucking push the button.
You'll bend over at the waist, push the button as if you were doing it standing up like a normal person.
Someone replied to this, by the way, that it's these elevators that have foot buttons or also have voice recognition.
Why does more stuff like this not exist? Isn't this just a logical way to advance things, or are we just so far behind?
Well, it'd get awkward for a building with, like, 38 floors.
That's true.
I'm still waiting on the pneumatic tubes from the Jetsons.
Or from Futurama. Yeah.
Futurama.
That scared the shit out of me. You mean the Hyperloop.
Hyperloop?
I am irrationally afraid of the Hyperloop.
Justin stays up at night thinking about the Hyperloop.
I'm afraid of getting stuck in the Hyperloop, and I think it's going to be clear so I can see all the dirt all around me, and it's just me. I picture a one-person Hyperloop, like you guys just described, clear, and getting stuck in it.
And you'll go, the bats will start flying up, and then they'll carry you up into...
And then you'll become Hyperloop Man. Yes. Get stuck, like... Traffic jam behind a chubby guy.
Yeah. Going down a water slide. I don't know. The Hyperloop scares the shit out of me. Scares the shit out of me.
Wallet as a taxpayer.
But I need to see the design plans of the Hyperloop before I use it. I need to know how many service tunnels there are, what their plans are for servicing it. I don't know. I'm irrationally terrified of it.
What is your zombie apocalypse plan? That's basically what you're asking.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, Elon, can you? Thanks, Elon. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. Let's wrap this episode up. What did we learn this week? Daniel?
Well, I learned that psychologizing can be fun. No wonder you do it.
I win!
So, it's like, you get this rush. It's like, I know better than all of you.
Yes, exactly. And yeah. I do. Elliot?
And? Truth.
I learned that Justin is afraid of the Hyperloop.
I am. Terrified.
And if you're a friend of Justin's who's prone to practical jokes, just remember that April Fool's is coming up. So just store that information in your brain somewhere.
Is it because the Hyperloop reminds you of a giant suctioning vagina?
No, it doesn't remind me of a giant suctioning vagina.
See, I was trying to psychologize.
Well, you see, you failed. Because my massive penis makes it so I'm not afraid of any vagina because I can slay any vagina with it.
Yeah, you've never fucked like Rosie O'Donnell, so. Anyway.
Never said I would, I just said that I could. Remember, can does not mean should.
Next week on Grammar House Rocks. Okay. Justin, what'd you learn?
Hopefully the listeners realize that I learned what was going on with the audio finally and how retarded Skype is, and my voice should be louder so you can hear my winning constantly now rather than I'm lower than everyone else.
Hooray for Justin figuring out technology.
I win.
Woo. Trust your wizard. And you're a winner too, audience, because you are listening to us, and I can't imagine what it's like to listen to us and not be us. Like, that's just, I can't imagine the pleasure that you
receive.
Sometimes
I'm like, how do we get 400 listeners a week?
Like, I don't know how that works. That's ridiculous. But thank you to all of our listeners. We sincerely love each and every one of you individually for your personal characteristics. And you can share those characteristics with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/themidside or twitter.com/themidside. Give us a little tweet. And I think I can run it on Instagram. What kind of fucking hipsters are we? But we are.
And don't forget, if you're listening on liberty.me, you can leave a comment on the SoundCloud.
That's right. You can leave a comment in the cloud.
Yeah.
Of sound.
Yeah.
It's a cloud.
Yeah.
With audio.
Yeah.
It's got mad bass.
Yeah.
So, also iTunes, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps us if you're into that kind of thing. Because again, we have a new enemy. Now that we've slayed Grantland, those fuckers, we took them down. Our new, enemy is Welcome to Night Vale. Because there can only be one Welcome to, motherfuckers.
Is this the wrong time to mention that Bill Simmons is launching a new site?
Yeah, that's going down too, after we take down Night Vale. What is this site called? It's called something stupid. Oh, The Ringer.
Yeah, it's called The Ringer.
That's what it's called.
And I love how I read an article where they listed all the other potential names and all of them were better than The Ringer.
Watch out, Bill Simmons. We're coming for you after we take out Welcome to Night Vale. That's right. Sleep with one eye open, Bill Simmons.
Shouldn't we aim a little lower and take out, like, Welcome to the Beehive first?
that 60s hairdo podcast.
Oh, I thought it was on, what is it, apiary? What did we learn? What's the word for beekeeping?
Apiary. Yeah, yeah. Apiarist. Yeah. Sounds like he's raping a bee. That's how we remember that. Apiarist. Yeah. And then, of course, our most beloved fans. We could not thank our Patreon supporters enough. Patreon is a site where you can go, patreon.com/themidside, and you can choose to give us real money. Well, what passes for real money in this economy? For every piece of content that we produce. And that helps us so much, helps us reach more than 400 people. It helps us reach little starving children in Ethiopia who have nothing to eat at night except the Midside podcast. It helps us save all those puppies you see on television. We put them inside little Midside cages and we bring them to the Midside. And then we just let them free into the Midside highway.
Honestly, if you just want to get my address and send me Batman versus Superman merchandise, I'll accept that too. So just tweet at me or get me on Facebook.
Yeah, so thanks. Tell a friend. That's the best way to do things. Tell a friend. Tell your coworkers at work, at lunch, when people are sitting around sort of quietly saying, like, what did you do this weekend? Oh, I didn't do anything. What did you do? Why don't you just take out your phone, bust out the Midside, and just play it for everyone at the table. And each time we say fuck, you're going to get a raise because bosses love people who are assertive and who bring non-suitable for work things to the lunchroom.
Yeah, they love men.
That's right. And women.
Glass ceiling.
Act like men with sledgehammers to the glass ceiling.
Glass
That's
ceiling.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, for all of you out there, thank you. Tell a friend. We love you.
I'm Justin M. Lesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the Midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.